Hey everyone, Broski here. Thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast. We really appreciate your support. What follows is episode 3 of season 2 featuring Steve Barber. Steve is the co-founder and CEO of Upstream Data, and Upstream Data has created the Ohm Miner, which is a mining solution provided to oil producers that help them convert their BTUs into BTC. And it was awesome to get to speak with Steve about this. He's an engineer by trade, comes from the oil industry, and now, as a full-time Bitcoiner and provider of these mining solutions to these oil producers, it was awesome to get to pick his brain and speak a little bit about his experience, not only in oil, but also in building this company. Because we hear all the time about how mining is destroying the environment, Bitcoin mining is destroying the environment. And here Steve is standing that argument on its ear and helping people who would otherwise be flaring natural gas or venting natural gas and damaging the ozone and the environment convert that gas into Bitcoin. So rather than costing society and those companies greatly, he's helping them make some money out of the process and save the planet one Bitcoin at a time. So we really enjoyed this conversation. We hope you will as well. This is a good one. So aside from that though, I do want to remind you all that the Hash Rate Podcast is a media sponsor of the Baltic Honey Badger Conference. It is September 14th and 15th in Riga, Latvia. It's going to be an amazing event. The speaker list is killer and the tickets are pretty cheap. I mean, for a Bitcoin conference, it's crazy to think how inexpensive these are for the value that you're going to get from them. So we're going to include a link in the show's notes. So if you want to do some research on the event and get a ticket, please do so. We're going to have Max from Hoddle Hoddle and the Baltic Honey Badger team on here soon to discuss the conference in more detail. And of course, the team will be there. So Hashrate will be in the building for that conference and we're excited for it. If you're going to be in Riga for those days, send us a DM, let us know. We'd love to get together, grab a beer, grab a coffee, whatever the case may be. And thank you for listening to the show because we do appreciate all of your support, guys. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get to the show. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Hashrate Podcast, your go-to weekly show about cryptocurrency mining and new tech. Thanks for tuning in. Here are your hosts, Crypto Chris Walken, Whale Bear Man, and the Bitcoin Broski.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hashrate Podcast. I am the Bitcoin Broski. Connor is having a flatulence problem today. Thanks, Whale Bear Man. And we've also got Mean Hash on the cast today. We're joined by special guest Steve Barber, and we're excited to have Steve on, talk a little bit about what he's doing at Upstream Data. But you know what I'd like, Steve, is if you could just give everyone an intro, let them know who you are and what you're about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm excited to be on too. It's pretty rare where I get to actually speak live with fellow miners and that kind of thing. I guess out, at least in my neck of the woods, it's pretty rare to even see anyone know anything about Bitcoin, let alone mining. So it's always good to have this kind of conversation. My background, I've been mining for about, I started in 2016. So by no means am I an OG. Started with like one S9 batch, I forget, but it was like summer of 2016. I remember that thing was earning like 0.012 bitcoins a day. It was great. And believe it or not, that little thing found me a block, although I was sharing it on CK Pool. So that's pretty cool. I think it was unbelievably lucky to have one S9 find a block, but at the time. Started in 2016. My background, I'm an oil and gas oil and gas engineer. Always for about, 10 years or so, I've been doing production and facilities engineering. Sort of got out of that. Well, I didn't get out of it, but I formally quit my position in 2016. Wasn't actually to mine Bitcoin or nothing like that. I'd heard of Bitcoin, but I hadn't even, put any thought into Bitcoin before. I never researched it or nothing. And I left and did some downhole tool design, which I sort of still passively do. Basically, that gig is sort of, I look at oil field tools, what works, what people like. I try to improve it. And then I just like license patents to service companies and just try to have a passive income from that. So I was doing that. And then, I had some downtime trying to get that thing going. And I was learning about Bitcoin. And Bitcoin mining in particular really drew me in. And mainly, I think the reason why I got drawn into mining right off the bat was I just saw immediately, it just was obvious to me that this was a great thing for oil and gas industry. So, and then, you know, when you start learning about Bitcoin then, of course, and everything to do with it, you realize it's just the best thing ever. So, you know, you just go down that rabbit hole. So that's how I got sucked in.
Awesome. And well, you know, my first exposure to your work was actually at the Fidelity Mining Summit in Boston. Was that in May, I think? And you gave a talk. And it, I mean, it was intriguing to me just hearing your point of view coming from the background that you you do, and talking, you know, about the solution that you've got for these, you know, oil producers, or however they're dubbed. I'm not in that industry, but you know, how did that transition occur? Like, what was it that took you from the S9 to starting upstream data and trying to provide solutions to these people?
Well, the first S9 actually was, I only got that to start upstream data. I didn't like anything. Like, before you start on a venture, you want to sort of get your head wrapped around it. So I bought that one S9, started mining in my garage just as a way to learn it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's pretty easy. We're just plugging in computers in the wall. But still, you want to get your head wrapped around of, like, you know, managing, you know, private keys, like how you're managing the pool and stuff. Like, all that was completely new to me.
That might be the most simplistic explanation, right? Plugging computers into the wall.
Well, that's what I tell people, like, that, you know, it's, and that's a great thing. Like, it's such a low barrier to entry to get into mining, which is all great for the security model. Like, it's all part and parcel to that. So, I mean, it is easy to get into it, but it's not easy to do it well and to, like, you know, stay in business with it. That, of course, that's two different things. But I started mining as a, you know, I had to learn what was going on with it. I was every day, every night, I was just, you know, on Bitcoin Talk, like, you know, finding out, like, what people were saying and learning the game there. And then, you know, I had no experience in, you know, data center construction, like, you know, designing electrical distribution systems. I am an engineer, but my background has nothing to do with that. I'm like a downhole pump expert. I'm like a servicing oil wells expert. So I had no idea what I was getting into. But, you know, like anything, anyone who you put your mind to it and start learning, Googling, getting on the forums, asking people, you quickly, like, you know, you start to, and I mean, even the first stuff I started building. So I started with that S9, started my company formally in 2017, like January 1st, but like it was 2016. I was like, okay, I got to build this data, figure out how to build these data centers. But I sort of finalized the design in early 2017. Just basically bootstrapped it, like, threw my money into it. I have a partner. He helped out a bit, but it's still, like, he's more of a silent partner. Built that first data center. And, you know, there's some photos I've put up online and talked about it. But, I mean, like, if you look, and I still, like, people, you know, people that reach out to me and want to, like, producers and even just third parties that are interested in what we do and possibly working with us and that kind of thing, I tour them out to the sites. And I'm always, like, sort of embarrassed to show them the first one. I wouldn't say embarrassed, but, like, it's one of those things. It's like an iteration process. Right. The first one was just very, like, over-engineered. I was thinking about every possible risk. And then, you know, when you get into it and you're out in the field mining and you're like, well, I didn't need to do that. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's a few things in there that just were completely unnecessary. But it was a great, and even to this day, like, what I'm building now, I'm going to iterate on that, I'm sure, right? And look back and be like, oh, I didn't need to waste my money on that stuff, right?
So for people who may not know, why don't we talk a little bit about the problem that you're aiming to solve with this?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I'm based in, I live in Lloydminster, Alberta. It's right on the border with Saskatchewan if you go straight shot east from Edmonton. We live, like, this is like the heavy oil capital of Canada. And so the problem we have here, and this is the same problem you get in pretty much every oil and gas field, like, around the world, is you get produced gas with your oil. You know, it comes out of solution with the oil. And the thing is, like, you know, the gas prices are so low, and they've been so low for so long, and they will be low for a long time to come, due to the technology, like the extraction technologies. Like think about fracking. Shale, like, yeah, fracking. Fracking is the big thing. Fracking, like, just look at the Permian Basin. They've had their gas prices go negative. Like literally producers are paying the midstream, the pipeline companies to get rid of their gas.
Don't they have like especially in fracking, I've heard that they have like barrels that they just can't even really use because of the extraction method, I guess. Like each barrel that comes out, there's also a bad barrel of gas or of oil, I guess.
You know, I don't actually personally have a lot of experience in the fracking side of the industry, but I haven't heard that. Usually the oil, they're going to be set up to process the oil and send it down the pipeline. It's usually the gas that, you know, they're just burning it off down there for sure. In my neck of the woods, where it's not a fracking game, it's more of a, I'll call it conventional, but it's actually sort of unconventional. It's a heavy oil. So you produce a lot of SAMD oil and stuff. But because of the nature of our oil and gas up here being heavy, and you cannot ship it down a pipeline, you literally got to truck it. There's no pipelines. And so to put a pipeline in just for the gas that comes up with the oil, it's just not never going to pay out. No one does it because you just go out of business. You just go out of business, right? So no one does it. So what they do instead is they literally just release into the atmosphere. Like I whipped up like a blog post on my website, and you can see what I'm talking about. I took a video of the gas spewing out of the pipe, right? And it's literally what I'm saying. It's just coming out of the pipe.
And that's flaring.
And so that's venting. Yeah, that's venting. And then flaring is just hooking that pipe up to a flare stack and burning it, which is better, right? Like if you're burning the gas, at least you're disposing it in an environmentally friendly manner. But venting is you know, it's the cheapest. You don't have to pay for a flare stack, right? So that's why everyone does it. And the regulations allow you to vent a certain amount of gas. Like Saskatchewan's 900 cubic meters a day, Alberta's 500 cubic meters a day. It's quite a large amount, and especially it adds up, given like that there's tens of thousands of well sites producing. So we're talking about enormous amounts of released energy, potential energy that's just doing nothing, right? So that's
the amount that's being vented, like the 900 cubic meters a day, or how many homes could that power? Like if that was actually able to be used or was used or people wanted to use that, what's the real conversion? Like how many homes could be powered by that?
Yeah, quick rule of thumb is 10 cubic meters a day. And I mean, for the listeners, I apologize, I'm using metric because I know I need to get my head wrapped around the, like, using MCFs. This is what we use up here. But so like 10 cubic meters of gas is enough energy, like per day, is enough energy to fuel 1 kilowatt. 10 cubes for 1 kilowatt constantly during that day. So 1 kilowatt day, I guess you could say. So 10 cubic meters. Yeah. And a house, your average house will consume approximately, and I'm also using the engine conversion in that too. Mm-hmm. Like there's more kilowatt hours in the gigajoule than what I'm saying, but it's about 25% is what the engine, you know, the thermal efficiency of a recip engine. So 10 cubic meters a day will do about that 1 kilowatt day of gas. And about every American household, for example, the average household will consume about 1.2 kilowatts. That's their load. So
you can say like roughly nine homes.
Yeah, so roughly 90 roughly homes.
90, maybe 85, but yeah. Still.
Yeah, and that's what you're allowed to do. But here's the kicker. So, you know, I'm in the oil field. I'm out there on these sites, and I'm talking to producers. These guys, like, you know, they're trying to stay in business. And when they have, let's say they have an oil well and it starts, you know, producing more than that amount, they're venting it anyway. and they don't do with it. So they don't report it, right? They're not going to say it's over that, because if they report it, then, you know, they got to actually spend money and do something. Right. Like the regulators are going to come after them, right? So they just don't report it. So, you know, when you for those people, like, you know, when you see the vent and flare volumes, flare is not maybe as big a deal, but when you see the vent volumes reported, let's say in Alberta and Saskatchewan and in the States, it's way higher than what they're reporting. And actually, people have done these aerial over, like using like thermography cameras to look at, you know, what is possibly actually being vented, and also like taking air samples. And like some studies have shown that it seems to be way higher than what's being reported. And I'm telling you, it's because producers will get clever. They'll send it through their tank. Like they'll put it, they'll send, do whatever they can to make it non-obvious. But at the end of the day, they just need to make money. And I'm not trying to make producers look bad. It's just the nature of, you know, human nature is to do this kind of thing. If it's a matter of going out of business, then they're going to do it. So, and you know, that's some producers, and I've been out to these sites that they're doing this. Other producers are highly compliant. Like my former employer, Husky Energy, they're a big, big name. They can't really risk getting in trouble over that kind of nonsense. So they can serve, they're very, you know, by the book. So I'm just sort of giving you a picture of what it's really like.
Sure. So, I mean, you've got these oil, what are they? Oil operations.
Oil wells.
Okay, so you've got these wells that are producing, you know, enough natural gas to power 85 homes a day, but it's just, you know, being sent into the atmosphere, and along comes you, right? And you've got your data center mining solution to help them convert that into basically money, right? So how long have you guys, I mean, did I see correctly that you've had your first machine that's been in operation for a year now?
Yeah, the first one was built in September 2017. It was finished. Excuse me. And it was operating. Well, no, I think it was operating in September 2017. It was built at the end of August. It took me about 2 weeks to get a site. So we've been up for quite a while. And, you know, coming from the upstream side, I built, like, I'm focused on being a service provider to oil companies, which is a little different than what, you know, some, like, there's been other people starting to do this kind of thing now. But what I certainly focus on is being a service provider. I try to build a product that the oil company is interested in, because I'm trying to solve their problem. I'm not just trying to go get cheap energy. That is part of it, right? But the energy I'm after is this stuff that's not just technically free, because I can get free energy. It's a liability to them. Like they, even though I don't have any setups now where they're paying me to be there, they're pretty much across the board willing to give me free fuel, because I'm getting rid of the problem. So that helps offset the fact that when you're doing smaller data centers and you're doing, you know, you got gen sets, it is capital intensive, right? It's going to be more like setting up what I'm doing is going to be a little more upfront capital and capital intensive than, I don't know, plugging computers into an old pulp and paper mill that has electrical distribution there, right? Like it's that capital cost on that kind of setup is pretty low. Whereas the capital costs on, you know, gen sets, small data centers, you don't get the economies of scale as like a massive Bitmain firm. Yep. But that is compensated for in the fact that it's solving a problem for the producer. And at the end of the day, I'm out here to sell these things to producers and operate it for them if they want me to. Or if they don't need me to, then, you know, they just operate themselves. And I have clients that do both. So
interesting. And how has the reception been? I mean, do you find that people are taking to this pretty quickly?
It's definitely been getting, I've been getting way more interest. Like some people listening are probably waiting for me to reply to them, like on some things, but that's part of the function of me still being really small. But I would say, like, so, you know, I got off the ground, I was up and running right when the bull run was peaking, right? I was at fall 2017, and that was a glorious time to be mining, right? It was just great. And the ASIC prices, I had bought that first batch of ASICs at, I can't remember the price. It might've been like, geez, it was the S9s, but it might've been, let's just say 1500 each. Then at the peak of the bull run, they were selling for like $4,000 each. It was just insane. So producers at the time, that, like, not a single one I talked to had any idea what I was talking about with, with Bitcoin mining and data centers and that kind of stuff. They like it was really just a crazy, I think to them, like they would just be, they would not just understand it at all. And then so like a lot of the pitch would be, you know, they would actually just be asking about Bitcoin, like what is Bitcoin, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd have to go through that with them, right? But I find now, like, so 2018, you know, we hit the bear market. It was like interest definitely, I could tell it was going down, at least in the sense that the payouts looked longer, right? Because of the revenue, you know, it was just off the radar a bit more, but we still, we're getting a bit of traction in 2018 and now, in 2019 with it pumping a little. And also, honestly, it's just the awareness around Bitcoin and the awareness around Bitcoin mining as a solution for stranded energy, partly, you know, from us promoting it and partly from others promoting it is making it more and more easier, like getting easier. Yeah. So,
I mean, I would say too, like in 2018, as far as like getting investors to start mines, there was a lot less interest in it. But the people who been in the game or maybe were very serious, like that's the best time to look at mining, calculate your ROI and everything else is when the bear market is there. Because one, you're going to get cheaper hardware. Two, your numbers are going to be very, not bad, but they're going to be pretty realistic, right? Like, I mean, as a whole, like you could say in the full bear market, if you run those numbers on miners, maybe specifically the S9s, you were looking at around 1 year ROI at that time, maybe a little bit over that, depending on your electricity rate. But it was you know, over 1 year, almost one top 1 year. I think the lowest that you could get would be like 7 months at 2 cents a kilowatt hour. But like those times are when you want to get someone to start mining, in my opinion.
It's the same psychology as with trading, right? You buy the blood, right?
Absolutely.
When everyone's fearful, that's when you want to take the capital and invest it. It's not when we're at 20K and miners are crazy expensive and everyone's in this mad dash to make fast money. I think the people who have come out of 2018 making the most money now are the people who are investing when everyone else was running for the hills.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, also for you, man, I mean, being that the power cost is, I mean, basically nil, it's gotta be incredibly, I would think the value prop for these companies is massive. I mean, it doesn't seem to be much downside, you know?
Notice his keyword is he's solving a problem. Right. Like how many miners do you know that are placing their mining operations in an area that has a problem for energy? Right. Like, I mean,
usually they're just stressing the grid.
Well, I mean, also you're kind of, you know, kicking all those people who say that mining is bad for the environment square in the nuts. I mean, if you think about it, how, like, I think it's what, according to your website, 25 times worse to vent than it is to
flare.
You know,
that narrative is just so silly, as we all know. But even beside, you know, I do think that, you know, we're a great example, and I love how much love it gets when I post, you know, like, okay, this data center, the first time I did it was the biggest tweet I ever had. I said, you know, our first data center's been running for a year or so, and it's, you know, reduced CO2 equivalent emissions by this amount. And I'm just using the same calculations all these, you know, climate change alarmists are touting, like for methane emissions versus combustion. So I'm just using their own math, and Bitcoin just reduces CO2e like by a huge amount if you're mining off vented methane. Even if you're mining off flared, using their same method, it does reduce emissions. I think that has to do with possibly, I'm a little unclear. I haven't published any of that because I'm still unclear on why that is, because flaring is combusting, putting it in an engine is combusting, but it's possibly because It's a little more efficient combustion in an engine than on a flare. Sometimes on flares, like some of the gas gets released uncombusted. So that could be it. But aside from it's obvious that, you know, we're a great obvious example, and hydro is a great obvious example of using waste, right? I've always just thought it was so silly because, you know, when you invest, energy waste alarmists, like, they never consider this stuff. Like, they never say, well, okay, $1 million or like a gigawatt invested into powering Bitcoin ASICs is a gigawatt not invested in whatever, you know, frivolous activity
right.
that it would be put into otherwise. Like, I don't know, I've said in the past, like building like fidget spinners or like crap, just producer consumer crap, right? Like just crap, you know, just stuff. This is money and energy displaced from the market. It's not really like an added, it's not necessarily an added energy consumption. It's also displacing other stuff, right? So right. you have to account for that. Like, but no, none of these people do, right? They just say, oh, you know, it's Bitcoin's consuming the amount of Ireland and we got to stop it. Like, give me a break.
It's like, fun, man, right?
Ignorant. I mean, you're just an ignorant moron. That's what it comes down to.
It's not like the planet is going to have a shortage of data centers in the next 50 years anyway. So whether you've got data centers that are mining Bitcoin or data centers that are powering Stadia for Google, it's going to happen either way. And yes, I understand that there may be higher consumption from a Bitcoin mine, but that's a negligible argument, in my opinion. Obviously, mm-hmm. all of us are miners and we're all biased. But it's just one of those things. I think that that right now they're clutching at straws trying to figure out how they can demonize Bitcoin any way that they can. Thankfully, we have Libra to look at now as, the worst them. Evil, if you will. Oh, for sure. It's great.
I can't wait to mine Libra.
Hey, listen, I put out a tweet that I think that's the only way that Libra will ever be widely accepted is if they did a Bitcoin talk announcement. Fair launch, no pre-mine. That's it. Fair launch, no pre-mine. Just, they can outspend people anyway to get mining infrastructure in place. But I wouldn't be surprised if Libra is actually the first coin to launch with their own ASICs.
But they're not using. I don't know much about Libra, right? They're not using paperwork, right?
It's
$10 million nodes, right? You gotta be a rich guy.
Cool.
Sweet. Sure. Can't wait.
For sure. Yeah. I've got a buddy that we talk about this almost every day. He is a huge conspiracy theorist and he's constantly shooting me these articles. And
are you talking about me?
No, you're just, you're the other one. But no, he keeps sending these articles about Libra and how it's going to aim to take over the world and devalue the dollar and all of this stuff. But the main point of it is it's getting people focused on cryptocurrency. Like, I don't particularly think that Libra is, I mean, it's going to happen whether we like it or not. You know, I don't think there's really going to be anything you're going to stop that guy from launching that thing if he wants to. But I think it'll be good. It points people in the right direction.
Everything is good for Bitcoin, guys.
Everything. There's nothing bad.
There's nothing bad for Bitcoin. Nothing.
Internet goes down. Oh, Bitcoin never goes down. Pump it.
All FUD is good for Bitcoin. Nothing.
I can't believe Mean Hash isn't chiming in on the Libra.
I know, man. He's been awkwardly quiet.
I've been blasting Libra for so long, I don't know if I have anything new to say about it. the one thing that I did want to talk about is when they're actually flaring the gas. Have you guys ever seen the pictures from outer space of North Dakota with that?
Peter Todd just sent something out recently. He took it from his airplane. It was going over North Dakota. Yeah. So similar to what you're saying, I couldn't believe it. I haven't been in North Dakota. But holy smokes, like, that is such a waste.
Yeah, I just put a link to the picture in the chat, but it's like almost as bright as Chicago.
Holy moly.
Man, that's crazy.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, that's you know, so, that the sad part of this, guys, like, as an oil producer, like, I've worked with oil producers and like, with directly with him, and now I work as a service provider. But the sad thing is, like, all that gas is effectively the drive, like the downhole drive. It's what drives the oil to the wellbore. It's what gives the oil its liveliness. So like in my neck of the woods, if you kill all the gas off the well, because it's a heavier oil, the oil actually starts to like get a consistency of like tar. And it's very difficult then to get it to surface. So your recovery rates go way down. So, you know, when you got all these flares just burning off that drive, we're literally torching the future. Like that's what we're doing. Like it's terrible. And
basically like getting short-term gains, right? Yeah. Out of something that could potentially make money long-term.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it just, of course, comes down to there's no demand for all this gas, but you know, let's just blame central banks.
Yeah. Well, take a look at that and gold.
Hold on. I want to back up real quick. So why would they burn it off? Like why would you flare it if you need it to then bring the oil up for the future? I mean, I was under the assumption that it was kind of a byproduct that was created in the drilling process.
You have to create demand, dude.
Yeah. There's a few things. Sometimes if the gas, I'm not too familiar with North Dakota, but I think a lot of it's fracking. And sometimes if it's very liquids rich gas, if it's like got heavier hydrocarbons, like it's not just methane, if it's like pentanes and hexanes, the heavier like the CH, the heavier CH hydrocarbons, it requires a bit more processing. And of course, the number one thing, of course, is always price. The gas price is low, and that's and so the demand is low. So like putting that in a pipeline and getting it to a market just isn't it's not feasible. So that's of course number one. But then there's other there can be other challenges. Like part of the reason why it's not feasible is because you might have to do a lot more processing on that gas because of the quality. It could be very wet. And that just adds to the cost, right? And at the end of the day, it just adds. The answer is it just doesn't pay out to do anything with it, and that's why they flare it. Because these guys want to make money, like. But if you're gonna make if you're gonna return your dollar in like 6 months, going after the oil, and it's gonna take you 5 years to get the gas, they're just gonna torch it. That's really what it comes down to.
So how much, if you can say, how much money are you saving? You know, any data center you deploy on a well, like how much money are you saving them? What's their ROI on their upfront cost too?
It's sort of somewhat of a complicated answer. So like if you're okay. So, let's just say the most recent data center I put out there last week was, it's my newest product. It's a little 4 foot cube called an Ohm Mini. I put it on a producer site. They had a flare going. They're only flaring like 200 to 300 cubes a day, but in that area they had to flare everything. So that's not a lot of volume. That's actually perfect amount to run a little 50 kilowatt data center. And that's the size of this little data center. So I put that out there. Basically the way that works is they already have an engine running the pump jack. In that case, it wasn't a pump jack, it's a rotary pump. But anyway, so they got a hydraulic motor on the end of, or hydraulic pump on the end of their engine, running that. And so we added a through shaft generator. So now we're generating electricity to that. So they basically have an engine running a generator, or running like an alternator, running a hydraulic pump, all three. And I actually threw up a little YouTube video. You can watch exactly what I'm talking about. And now that engine was only running at like 10% or 20% of its output. And so, and the rest of that gas, you know, the engine didn't need it. So it was just going to the flare. So in this case, like what did they save on this? Well, they invested in a Bitcoin mine and they're going to get the revenue. And you guys know how to calculate per kilowatt hour, time to revenue based on I'm using just Antminer S9s. So they're going to get that revenue to pay out the data center, but also they're going to disassemble that flare stack and salvage that and move it to a new site. So now they don't have to build a flare on a new site. They just get to move it. So they're saving whatever that capital is in that flare stack. That's also a monetary benefit. And then the third benefit is emissions reduction. Right now, upstream producers are exempt from paying carbon taxes here in Canada because we have carbon tax, but They won't be in the near future. So right now it's not a big deal, but in like a couple of years, that'll be a third savings, like emissions reduction. So, and then, you know, whatever value you put on environmental stewardship, because companies that, you know, are like the Huskies of the world, the bigger oil companies that are putting a lot of effort in stewardship, maybe that gives you some share value. I don't know. I don't know how shareholders, if they're rallying that or not truly, but you can at least, there's a marketing spin there too, right? So,
Let's talk about the, you know, once the oil well has run dry, so to speak, is there gas left over?
Yeah, I mean, when the oil well, I mean, if it's an oil well, I mean, it was drilled as an oil well, it's completed as an oil well, it's there to produce oil. And then when that depletes to the point where it's not economic to run, yeah, they'll just abandon it. Now, like they won't just like, they could actually technically probably still seep some gas up the well pretty easily, depending on the completion. But generally, they'll abandon it, right? It's just not going to be that profitable. See, one reason why I haven't gone after gas wells, like I haven't really targeted like gas producers with my products. I mean, I sort of am, but they're not like my primary service. I'm trying to go after the oil guys who have this liability gas. See, the thing with the gas wells is most gas wells, if they're operating, then of course they're going to be tied in already. They already have a sales line. So for me to go in and get their gas cheap, I'm not going to get it any cheaper than what they're getting already, right? So that's one thing. However, in Alberta and Saskatchewan, and pretty much I would guess at every oil field on the planet, there are all these mature gas wells, mature and oil wells as well, that are sitting there. They're not abandoned. Their wellhead's still there. They're not like cut and capped and released or claimed. They're just waiting for better times. In Alberta, like companies that go bankrupt, all of their assets go into the orphan well fund. Basically, it's taken over by the taxpayer. And even before that happens, if the company's still operating, the company doesn't want to abandon their well, because there's no money to be made. If you have a well that's no longer productive, that abandonment liability can be in the six figures. So like sometimes it's around here, it's 60. It depends on the well and how you have to abandon it. But it might be 60 grand, 80 grand Canadian. It can be over 100 grand, especially if the job goes bad. So these guys do not want to spend that money. And so they have all these gas wells, just mature gas fields, stripped of equipment, no more compressors, just sitting around. They're playing past the parcel on who's got to pay for that. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, a lot of the times that ends up in the hands of the taxpayer. And then, of course, the government gets involved and we probably have to abandon it at twice the cost due to the government inefficiencies. But so like one thing when I'm out pitching our solutions to producers, I'm like, you know, guys, if you got these, like most of them have it, like you got these liabilities, like these old, suspended gas wells, like you should consider this, like you can throw an engine on that site. You don't need a compressor. You don't need to reinvigorate the pipeline, right? If the pipeline's suspended or whatever, just leave it. And you can throw up a data center, start making money and actually making better money than you would selling it. I don't have any of those applications yet, but I expect to get some coming.
Interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's like a no-brainer, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, because the waste in those, because we're talking about waste, salvaging waste, and the waste in those applications is the sunk capital in that infrastructure. You have all the sunk capital. Mm-hmm. A really good example, I was just down in Texas. We did our first Texas install, which is exciting because, of course, there's tons of potential in Texas, but also it's the first time I've been operating in such a warm climate. Like I'm used to Canada. So that's like one of the challenging aspects of designing a data center for there. But that was fun because I'm not going to disclose, and I never disclose our clients, but their application was they went and did some exploratory drilling. They went and tried to find some nice oil wells. They missed the oil, but they found some enormous like gas reserves. They had a couple wells and possibly more being drilled. But the problem they have is that they're so far away from any infrastructure that they're looking at They told me like 8 to 9 million US to get a pipeline in the ground. That's not including like the cost and the ongoing cost of compression. Because anytime you're compressing, like you're talking high pressures, and high pressures in general just mean high price. So it's they're not really going to do anything. So they're looking at, they have all this capital sunk, and they're like, and their only option really is to abandon the well under like traditional options. But they got a young guy in the company, and he's a forward thinker, and he was learning about Bitcoin. And he sort of thought of it, and then found us, and we designed him a sort of a custom. This data center is interesting. Like they want it because it's so much gas that they need like a lot of megawatts, but they wanted to dip their toes. So I designed them a custom data center where I'm just plugging in 6 of the engines we build and like just stacking the engines like in a lot, like so adding them one at a time.
I was looking at. Yeah, that's great. I was looking at your solution, and you know, the biggest thing for me, and like as a miner, I was like, the amount of upfront capital to get the megawatts that I would consider to be a efficient, you know, mine, it costs a lot of money. But now that I've, you know, spoken with you, there's a lot of other costs that these guys are gonna take anyways for not using your solution. So it makes a lot more sense now, because before I was like, why would anyone want to, you know, put that upfront capital on something so small, right? Like some of these data centers that you have are very small, and they're not gonna generate someone like an insane amount of Bitcoin or anything like that. But the offset that you are speaking of, it makes complete sense. Like
you know what? That comment is a really good comment. And that's what a lot of people don't get when they reach out to me. Cause you know, being in the Bitcoin space and on Bitcoin Twitter, I get a lot of people, you know, reach out and they want to get involved and they want to quote out data centers and quote out gen sets. And then when it comes down to it, you know what, like pretty much, you know, unless we don't think Bitcoin price is going to increase, at some point you're going to pay out your investment. But the thing is, you got to consider the opportunity cost of just buying, like we were sort of saying, like throwing like any county that's got cheap power, just throwing up a large scale data center there. That's quite easy to do. And even if you're using container mines, just throwing it on to a utility. So like, you don't have to pay for the genset. You're getting better economies of scale. So that's where I really emphasize that I'm not here. I don't exist to service the mining community. I'm not like people that have been wanting to host with me and stuff. I can probably offer a pretty good hosting package, but I can explain why I haven't really moved on that too quickly, because I've had a lot of people wanting to host. But the I'm here to help the oil companies, and they get all the benefit, right? Like, so when I put a data center out there, they're getting all these benefits that I don't get, like as upstream. So like, even if I build a data center and they don't buy it off me and I'm just using their gas for free, I'm not getting the benefit of the compliance that they're getting, and the fact that they're saving on not having to put in a compressor or whatever. So that's why right now I don't worry about, I haven't worried about, just because I want to get this out there and get their heads wrapped around that this is a real solution, I haven't worried about them paying me for the service, like paying a rental fee. I actually have this, I had this document, I took it off the website, but I'll put it back up. It's conservation as a service, which is what I call it. I'll come in and conserve your waste for free, but honestly, they should be paying me to do that. I haven't pushed that angle, because right now I'm happy to do it for free. We still make money doing it, but in the future, that would be probably a paid service.
Well, it's probably kind of, I mean, I used to work in the cell phone tower industry, and they had to upgrade all their towers at one point. Like they were saying, you know, 4G at the time, it was 3G, and then, you know, 4G was coming, or I don't remember, LTE was coming out and all the towers weren't sufficiently rated to carry the load of all these new antennas. So they had a literally by a certain year, they had to upgrade all these towers or modify them. And then we went off and made a structural modification company for cell phone towers. But I won't get too far into that. But there's no way that all these people could make all these towers sufficient for these upgrades for all these new antennas. And like kind of what you're saying is probably 2 years down the line, all these oil wells are going to need to figure out, you know, what they're going to do with all this wasted energy. And the smart companies are going to start doing it today. And then probably next year or a year and a half from now, your company is not going to be so lenient on, you know, doing this for not free, but, you know, not charging to do it. Right. So I think that just lines up really well, because now all these companies that are smart are going to get all the publicity, and the companies that lag are going to be paying you more for what you did, you know, today.
Yeah, no, I think when it becomes more of a normal thing to be throwing data centers on these wells, I would expect it to be a paid service. But it works fine as is, and you know, you also got to consider, you know, and I've always said, like, for the miners out there looking to invest into mining, like, you're gonna want one way or another, and this is just my opinion, but and I'm a little biased because I build portable, but you should be building out portable options. So when they screw you, like when the utilities screws you inevitably,
they always fucking screw you.
Yeah, they always screw you, and they will. Especially, you know, almost I would say every utility out there is government run to some degree, or certainly government subsidized. So they're just at the whims of what the politicians want to do, and they're going to screw you. So at the very least, do portable.
I completely agree. I mean, Meathash can even attest to this, but
he can attest to this. Like, it just happened.
I just moved an operation that I had because they jacked up the price on the electricity on us.
Hold on, can we talk a little bit about your previous cost of electricity though, now that you're not there anymore? Can you share how spoiled you were?
So I had set up some mining basically in an area where the electricity was super, super cheap. It was basically a flat rate for the whole year because it was bulk negotiated with like a rural electricity co-op. And now that's just not an option anymore. So I moved some stuff to a different place.
Wait, what was that number? What were you paying per year?
120.
Oh my god.
$100 and what? $20.
Yes. Yeah. For about
to mine his face off.
That's a cost of two miners running in my basement right now.
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. They woke up and they jacked it up on you.
Yeah, I've been seeing actually a movement in kind of decentralized data centers in general, though. I think that even for big companies that are running data centers, you know, for like their back end or like AWS solutions and things like that, having them all in one place makes it be a lot more risky. So you know, just a couple of weeks ago, there was that huge outage where like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, like 30% of the websites went down. Somebody attacked a DNS server warehouse. And so anybody who had a data center set up that was near that DNS server or routed all their traffic through that one DNS server,
it
went down. You know, but if those companies were to, you know, have their data centers spread out across the whole country, their sites would be down for anybody who used those DNS servers. But for the rest of the world, they would have been fine. So I think there's starting to be a big push just in general to start decentralizing a bunch of that data. I think the even for big companies like Google and Amazon, like 100 megawatt facilities, they're going to go away because it's just it's too risky to have all that in one place. You know, Twitter and Google and Facebook being down for like 4 hours that day probably cost them buku dollars. And so it'll start making sense for them to set them up all over the place. I got a feeling you're going to see a lot of that in the next couple years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Risk mitigation.
So, you know, as we get into wrapping things up here, Steve, you know, first and foremost, I just want to thank you again for making the time to come on the show, and discuss what you're doing. It's awesome.
It's my pleasure.
Awesome to hear what you're working on. And we're excited to see how this continues to grow.
Hey, I'm going to let you finish, but I really wanted to ask him something.
Fine. Hey, go ahead. Ask your question.
So fracking, does it cause earthquakes?
Yeah, it's, I would say yes. It's not like I'm a authority on the matter, but I know for a fact that in my area where we don't do fracking, what happens, there's actually subsidence, like the ground level drops over time because of you're extracting all this literally like fluid and gas out of the ground. So like it's been measured, like I was told when I first started working here, it was 6 feet over like 50 years or something like that. The ground dropped. Wow. We've had cases in Canada where they fracked, and I can't remember what you call it. They literally cracked the ground to surface and had, you know, the pressure came through.
Holy
That's really bad because you're talking about busting through water tables and stuff. It's when you like, there's a certain pressure you can build to based on depth. And I guess they must've went over. But fracking causing earthquakes, like, I mean, it doesn't seem, I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, I studied, so in college, I did a whole presentation on it and everyone made fun of me, but it was, my professor loved it, but everyone else is like, yeah, like fracking doesn't cause like earthquakes. It's actually healthier for the environment. I'm like, you're literally taking the ground and pressurizing all the like gaps between it and then blowing it up and then extracting, you know, whatever is in there, and then it's gone. And so there's nothing there anymore. It's like, anyways,
Thank you for that explanation, Aaron Brockovich. We appreciate that, man.
I'm with you, man. Yeah.
Here's the other thing too for the industry. It makes, right now at least, it makes, you know, oil prices so cheap because fracking from like a traditional standpoint, doesn't cost as much from an operational standpoint. So I think the reason why oil got so cheap is because of the fracking boom, because the oil that wasn't ever able to be extracted started coming, you know, freely everywhere, and then they just have an excess of oil in the U.S. Especially.
Yeah, you're right, absolutely. And actually, in the industry, and when I was down in Texas, we were talking about it. I'm no expert on it, but like, I've heard many times that these Permian plays, like these fracking plays, they don't actually pay out. And yeah, all the Wall Street money that was pumping it up is slowly, slowly getting away from it. So, I mean, I think if it comes down to it, we're talking about higher level power plays between, you know, governments, because, I mean, oil and gas is literally the lifeblood of every economy out there. So I think there's a lot of manipulation going on. And unfortunately, that is resulting in a lot of this waste because the market isn't demanding these things and these sources, and we're ending up wasting a lot of it. So yeah, Bitcoin will save everybody.
That sounds like a good note to end on right there. Bitcoin will save everybody. Steve, thanks for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it. We look forward to seeing upstream continue to progress, seeing more ohm miners all over the place. And to our listeners, we appreciate you guys for tuning in. Until next time, we will talk to you guys soon.
That's a wrap for this week's Hashrate Podcast.
If you enjoyed it, please do us a huge favor and subscribe to the show and leave us a rating on your preferred podcasting platform. For daily updates and memes, remember to follow us on Twitter at Hashrate. That's H4SHR8. Thanks for tuning in.